Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Visions of Dr. James Herriot or Dr. Doolittle are typically conjured up when you say the word veterinarian, but veterinarians do so much more. There is currently a critical shortage of these professionals. This deficiency may not only impact the health of your pets, but may also put our nation and possibly the earth at risk of a health catastrophe. My guest today is Dr. Gregory Hammer of Dover, Delaware. He is the current president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. During Dr. Hammer's inaugural address this past July in Washington, D.C., he stated that his goal was to seek passage of the Veterinary Public Health Workforce Expansion Act, as well as continue the work that his predecessor, Dr. Roger Marr, began regarding the One World, One Health, One Medicine initiative. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
School's in session on Pet Life Radio with Teacher's Pet. Learn how to communicate with your pet, train your pet, and see the world from your pet's point of view. You may even learn a few tricks yourself. Teacher's Pet with pet expert and author Sarah Wilson, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Hammer, I am so honored to have you as a guest today. I know that you've been traveling extensively promoting veterinary medicine, so again, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Well, first of all, for those people that don't know, what is the AVMA?
Well, the AVMA is the national organization representing veterinarians throughout the country. It stands for the American Veterinary Medical Association. And we're very fortunate to have about 76,000 members, which represents 86% of the active veterinarians in the United States. So the AVMA carries the mantle for veterinarians throughout the country. And as president, I am the spokesperson for that. And we're very fortunate to have, obviously, 86% of the veterinarians that are members of this profession as compared to some of the other medical professions that do not enjoy that kind of percentage. So AVMA really does speak to the public and the government on behalf of veterinarians throughout the country.
How many veterinarians are there right now in the United States that are practicing?
There are about 86,000 veterinarians involved in active practice, and that includes anything from the typical clinical practice that most people associate with, companion animal, dogs, cats, horses, and so forth. Also, food animal veterinarians. There is a large contingent that we call public practice that works in the government and public health, the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. And we also have a number of veterinarians in the military, about 740, that protect the safety of our troops with food safety overseas and also in our country here at the bases in the United States.
I think that's fantastic that people get to hear what veterinarians are really involved with. So I think a lot of us have that view of the animal planet veterinarian, you know, the Dr. Doolittle type of thing. I was actually reading today that the world's population is growing at a tremendous pace, adding about 78 million people per year. And the United Nations estimates that there's going to be, in probably the year 2030, about 8 billion people that are inhabiting the Earth and really straining the ability to feed itself. How do you envision veterinarians being involved in this?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I just got a statistic the other day from the U.S. Census Bureau that stated, for the U.S. obviously, that by the year 2025, the human population in the U.S. will increase about 15%. And historically, animal populations increase proportionally. And with today's shortages of veterinarians, plus the projected increases over the next 20 years, there's going to be a shortage of over 15,000 veterinarians to support and react to the demand from our public and to protect public health.
When you were installed as president of the AVMA, that you stated that one of your personal passions was to get this Veterinary Public Health Workforce Expansion Act passed. What is that?
Well, right now, my job as president, the way I see it, is to really get people interested and excited about becoming politically active to get this act passed. We're looking at about 1,500 veterinarians a year shortage right now. We're looking at about 500 veterinarians in the food animal area that protects us against foreign animal disease and is the first line of defense in a foreign animal disease outbreak. And so my job is not only to get veterinarians interested, but also the public, and ask them to contact their federal congressional delegations and ask them to co-sponsor and get on the rolls as far as sponsoring this act, so we can improve the infrastructure and educate more veterinarians. Because without that, the veterinary colleges, we have 28 veterinary schools in the United States that graduate.
How many medical schools are there? Any idea?
125.
So there's 28 veterinary schools.
28 veterinary schools and about 125 medical schools. We graduate about 2,500 veterinarians a year, and they graduate about 10 times that many physicians. And at the same time, veterinarians are really the only health professional that that are the link between animal disease, human disease, food safety, bioterrorism, and so forth. And many diseases that have been identified by the Centers for Disease Control are diseases between animal and man. And veterinarians are the first line of defense. And if we don't have enough veterinarians to react to that, we could put this nation at great risk. So I'm not only calling on veterinarians to call their congressmen and their senators, but also their clients and anybody else listening.
With this expected shortage and the current shortage that we have right now of veterinarians, why do you think there's so few veterinary schools, since it is such a critical need for us to have these veterinarians, not just taking care of animals, but as you're saying, in the public health field? I'm not sure if a lot of people realize, you know, we've all heard of West Nile virus and think, oh yes, you know, we have to be careful of our mosquitoes and don't have standing water. But I think a lot of people don't realize it was actually a female veterinarian, a pathologist who was working for the Bronx Zoo, who realized several years ago that all these crows were dying and people were getting sick, and somewhat thought outside of the box and put the two together and realized it was West Nile. Why do you think there's so few veterinary schools?
Well, first of all, the veterinary schools, there's 28 of them in 26 states that are being supported primarily by their state's revenue. And they are at their maximum capacity right now due to space limitations. To educate a veterinarian, it's a very specialized field, much more so than other medical professions. Limitations for diagnostic laboratories, teaching, the structures that have to be built from anywhere from the smallest laboratory animal to the largest livestock and wildlife are very unique in construction. And the restraint, the handling requirements, all of these are very difficult to build. So it's very expensive to run a veterinary school. And the unique training there makes it difficult. So we have a limited number of veterinary schools because it is so expensive to run one.
Do you think that if we're fortunate enough to get this Veterinary Public Health Workforce Expansion Act passed, will that fund more veterinary schools or just give more funding to the schools that are presently there?
The purpose of the Workforce Expansion Act, and I might mention the numbers for the people that are listening, it's Senate Bill 746 and it's House Bill H.R. 1232. And that's the numbers that they need to use when contacting their congressional delegation. As far as its purpose, it's an act to provide over a 10-year period competitive grants to the existing veterinary schools to expand their infrastructures to graduate and educate more veterinarians. There is no plan in this act to build more schools because that's really economically unfeasible to do. I mean, you would probably use up all that money to produce a couple of veterinary schools. So the existing veterinary schools would compete for the monies to enlarge their facilities to expand their graduating classes.
If there already is, and there's going to be a increased shortage of veterinarians, why is it inappropriate to have, say, for instance, a medical doctor fill that position or a layperson of all the public health positions that are needing in the federal and state public health sectors? Why is it inappropriate to have an MD versus a veterinarian there?
Well, veterinarians are uniquely qualified with their education, again, as I mentioned before, to link animal diseases, human diseases, food safety, bioterrorism. If you look at a physician's training, they are not schooled in animal diseases, food safety, and the public health aspects. Perhaps in postdoctoral education they may be, but in general, the veterinarian is the only medical professional that is schooled in comparative medicine. And that's why it's so important. And again, as we've mentioned, most of the emerging diseases in the last three decades have been diseases that have been transferable to animals and man. And physicians, because of their unique education, are not schooled in animal diseases. And so they deal with zoonotic diseases, which are those diseases from animal to man, very rarely, and focus more on diseases of the human being, whereas veterinarians go across the board.
I totally agree with you that veterinarians are ones that have learned to treat all species, so to speak, and MDs tend to specialize in the human primate. I know that when I many times have a client come in and they want to have a toxoplasmosis test, and it's like, let me guess, you're pregnant and your MD has now scared the bejeebers out of you that your kitty that you've had in the house for 5 years is going to give you a terrible disease and give it to the baby, and they're shaking their head and, you know, being aghast going, it's all right, we'll do the test, things are okay. But so many times MDs just really aren't, I think, up to the same speed as maybe sometimes veterinarians are on diseases that can go across the board, as you're mentioning, those zoonotic diseases. One of the things, Dr. Hammer, that I've noticed in the veterinary profession looking around is that there's been a marked feminization of the colleagues that I'm seeing. Is there a problem with diversity right now in the veterinary profession? Is it just changing with the human population, or what do you see there?
Well, I think it's been noted that veterinary medicine is probably the least diverse medical profession at this point, unfortunately, in underserved populations, and we're talking more race there than anything else. 30 years ago, the majority of veterinarians were male and were white. The majority now are female veterinarians. And I think that's good. I think female veterinarians have brought a whole different outlook. I have a partner that is female that she's brought a great new enthusiasm, a great new compassion, a whole different way of looking at the workplace because she has children and so wants to be home with those children, and I think it's been great. I do think, however, veterinary medicine needs to work a lot harder on admitting students of color and students that represent the population that we serve.
I love veterinary medicine so much because there are so many options that are available for you. I think you're mentioning that definitely of having women in the workforce where they realize they can sometimes work part-time, still have the family. And I know when I was in veterinary school, when a classmate of mine, a female classmate of mine, wanted to go into equine or horse medicine or go into bovine, work with cows, cattle, they were going, a woman can't do that. And more they're realizing it's not so much the brute force that's necessary, but women can get into all of these areas. There's so much that's open and available to them. How do you see the veterinary schools getting the word out to these minorities, into the underserved areas? How do we get more people into veterinary medicine to improve the diversity?
Well, there is an active push right now by the Association of American Veterinary Medical Colleges, AAVMC, which is the national organization representing the 28 veterinary schools and also colleges of veterinary science throughout the United States, to improve their applicant pool. And they do that by going out to the underserved populations, making sure they're aware of it. AVMA is making a push right now to try to get into middle schools and high schools and to really educate the underserved area, the underserved population, rather, about veterinary medicine and the opportunities, that you don't just have to be a clinical practitioner. You can go in academia, you can go into the military, the public health, as I've said before. So we're both organizations are making an active push right now to get into the middle schools and high schools to try to get the underserved or the underrepresented populations more involved in veterinary medicine. And it's going to take years to do that. But it's also taken years for dental schools and medical schools to do the same. We're just a little behind at this point.
Dr. Hammer, could you give the people that are listening who might be interested in themselves getting into veterinary school or have friends, children who might be, what's involved to get into school? Do you have to have a 4.0? Do you have to have a bachelor degree in science, for instance, to become a veterinarian?
Well, first of all, I don't want to kid anybody. You have to have very good grades, and you have to be motivated towards working with animals and people. And it's a great, great profession. I can't think of anything else I would rather do. I have fun every day, and as I've said to you, Dr. Cruz, I literally go into work every day for entertainment and have a great time. I will never burn out being a veterinarian because it's just so much fun every day.
You're a companion animal veterinarian, correct?
I am. Companion animal and horses. We take care of horses in my hospital, too.
But you must have a very big waiting room.
I was in the military for 2 years before that, and I was a year in mixed practice like the James Harriet type book practice. So I've had a lot of experience. But for the younger listener, I mean, you have to have good grades. You have to be interested. I would highly recommend calling a veterinarian, calling your veterinarian if you have an animal, and whether it's you live on a farm or you live in a city, and having some interaction with that veterinarian and asking him just exactly what it takes to be, and perhaps spending a day shadowing a veterinarian and see if it's something that you really might like. And then as far as the educational requirements, certainly your guidance counselors can help you with that, but at this point it requires in most schools a 4-year undergraduate degree and then an admittance to veterinary school, and veterinary school is also a 4-year professional degree. So it's an 8-year post-high school education.
Well, Dr. Hammer, I really appreciate what you've been telling us right now about this workforce expansion. If somebody wanted some more information on workforce expansion and how they can try to convince their representatives in Washington, D.C., where can they go to get some of this information?
The best place to go is on our website at AVMA, and that website is www.avma.org, and you will find links to the Workforce Expansion Act, and it will give you the number and how to do that. And then also you can call AVMA headquarters in Chicago. There is an 800 number, and that's 800-248-2862. And you can get all the information you want. But I would really, really, we are at a crisis situation with the shortage of veterinarians for perhaps the future and the public health. And that's what we're trying to protect is the health of both two-legged and four-legged creatures here. So if your listeners could make that phone call or write a letter to their congressman, we would really appreciate it.
I've been speaking with Dr. Gregory Hammer, the president of the American Veterinary Medical Association, and he's been explaining why it's critical, especially at this time, to have passage of the Veterinary Public Health Workforce Expansion Act. Please stay tuned. After the short break, we're going to hear from our sponsors. Dr. Hammer is going to tell us about how veterinarians and MDs are now working together to ensure the well-being, not just of people and animals, but also the environment. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
There's nothing like a shaggy dog, baby. They're shagadelic. And this is the place to find out how to have harmony in the household with your pets. Oh, yeah. So stop by our pad every week and get switched on, baby. Switched on to the show that's all about attitude. Oh, behave. With your groovy host, pet edutainer Arden Moore. Yeah, baby, yeah. Every week on demand on PetLifeRadio.com.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggy's duffel bag, and that's Phyto-Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city, and state reviews, and doggy destinations to explore with your furry companion. Phyto-Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, pet boutiques, and Phyto-Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.phytofriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Phyto Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend, and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Hammer, thank you again so much for being with us. I've heard, especially at Washington, D.C., when you were being sworn in as our new president for the AVMA, of this One World, One Health, One Medicine initiative. Could you tell us a little bit, what does it mean?
Yes, I can, and thank you for the opportunity to do that. My predecessor, President Roger Marr, his initiative during his presidency was to try to link both human medicine, veterinary medicine, and public health and environmental medicine together in a One Health initiative. This is not something new. It's been around for decades, actually, but it has been very, very slow to come around. And our purpose is to provide the conduit that we may get those fields together in order to improve the health of humans and animals that we serve.
I know that you mentioned earlier in this show that in the last 20 years, about 75% of all emerging diseases have been zoonotic diseases, those diseases shared by humans and people. Avian influenza, we're hearing about AIDS and some of the research that's going on there. The Ebola virus, all of these things are out there, and I think it makes it very imperative that there is a working relationship between the MDs and veterinarians. Can you give us some other examples in ways that right now veterinary medicine is involved in homeland security?
Well, it is so important for veterinarians to be involved in homeland security because the areas that we're concerned about are those areas that would specifically affect food safety. One outbreak of foot and mouth disease, for instance, would cost the U.S. over $14 billion in losses. And imagine if the consumer did not have the availability to go to their fast food hamburger stand and things like that because they were unsure whether that food was going to be wholesome or not. And
veterinarians, so that foot and mouth affects only cows, correct?
Correct. Thank you for mentioning that. Foot and mouth is not a zoonotic disease, does not affect people, but it would affect our food supply and would make it very difficult for people to have the abilities to go to the store and buy the meats and so forth that they would buy. So veterinarians are very much on the forefront as far as diseases of foreign animal diseases and also the diseases that unfortunately have been considered as agents to be used in bioterrorism. And those are like tularemia and the smallpox virus and other things like that.
Anthrax,
that could be
too.
Spread very easily. Anthrax, yes, thank you. So we're constantly being vigilant about that, and it's so important, as you mentioned, for physicians and veterinarians to work together because it may be the veterinarian that notices this first or it may be the physician, but we need to talk back and forth together. And it's not just the person that comes in, as you mentioned, with a fear about toxoplasmosis or the client that I get in that their physician has said their child has strep throat, you need to take a look at the dog and the cat. We need to collaborate a lot more so we can have a one medicine concept and protect our public a lot better.
Well, I know that it's a task force that has been called together by the American Veterinary Medical Association and the American Medical Association, correct me if I'm wrong, to see if they can work together to find a way to get communications flowing more freely between these two organizations.
Yes, we were very much buoyed by the fact that the AMA, the American Medical Association, passed a resolution this summer at their national conference supporting the One Health Initiative and wanting to be involved in this task force. AVMA has taken the lead on this and has appointed the members of the task force, which involve both physicians, veterinarians, actually a veterinary student, and also a medical student from Penn State. And this task force will meet the end of November, and we're hoping to have some concrete, doable objectives that we can collaborate on both in human and veterinary medicine and bring that to the forefront, again, for the better health of the public we all serve.
It sounds like you came from the better health of our entire planet.
You bet.
Well, Dr. Hammer, I really appreciate that you communicating so eloquently on how veterinarians play such a crucial role in our everyday lives of all the things that we're involved with. And you can probably tell that, listeners, that I'm very proud to be a veterinarian. It is a field that has so many opportunities, is constantly changing. So if any of the listeners ever decide that you feel you want to get into veterinary medicine, do chat with your local companion animal veterinarian, but realize there is so much more than just companion animal veterinary medicine. I enjoy it. I like it. I know Dr. Hammer does too. And just trying to make sure that veterinarians are taking care of people as well as animals, as well as the environment. It's so important. And why is it important to me? Because it's our life, our health. and health matters. Dr. Hammer, thank you again for being with us today.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. On demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.